California Judge Michael Nash moved this year to open previously closed child welfare hearings in L.A. County, unless there's proof that doing so will harm the child. A move applauded by those who say there needs to be more transparency on decisions by judges in family courts, a system that varies not just state by state, but county by county. In fact, in some states, children don't even have a right to attend custody hearings. And Gail Helms helped launch the open courts push in California after her 2-year-old grandson was beaten to death by his father, who was awarded custody despite a history of drug abuse. Well, today we have a story of a woman who took things into her own hands when she felt the courts failed her. A judge in Minnesota agreed that Holly Collins had been abused by her husband, Mark, but the court ultimately gave custody of their children, 11-year-old Zachary and 9-year-old Jennifer, to Mark. The court evaluator determined that Holly's concerns about her children's health amounted to Munchausen's by proxy. That's the rare disease that makes caregivers lie about children's health. And the court said she was interfering with the kids' relationship with their father. But the children begged Holly to come get them, and in 1994 she did, fleeing the country, landing Holly on the FBI's most wanted list.
I actually, as a kid, thought it was quite ridiculous when we heard that they were actually charging my mom for kidnapping her own children, taking them away from an abusive father. It seemed completely ludicrous to me.
That's a now-grown Zachary Collins in the new documentary No Way Out But One, which tells the story of Holly Collins, who took her children to the Netherlands and became the first American to be granted asylum there. She's since returned, her name cleared, and Holly Collins now joins us. Holly, you know, father's rights groups, like one led by Glenn Sachs, are outraged at what you did. Wasn't there another avenue?
I did everything I could think of. In the beginning, I wasn't allowed to have visitation with the children. When I finally was allowed to have supervised visitation by a court officer, Jennifer, at one of the visits, came in and she said, "He's still hurting us." The visitation supervisor said, "You're not allowed to talk about those kinds of things anymore." Then I knew that the children were being silenced, that the children were still being abused, and nobody was protecting them.
We're not going to re-litigate the case. You were cleared. But just how did you do this? You ended up getting out of the country with your children because you had help from an underground network. Now, I know you don't want to go into too much detail. It's a secret underground network. But how did you find them? How did they find you?
They found me. I started making these packets of all of the evidence, and I just started sending them out to anybody and asking them, in my letter, could you please copy and send this on to someone who might be able to help us? I sent it to the President of the United States. I sent it to Janet Reno. I sent it to any organization I could think of. I even sent it to some biker organizations.
And then what happened?
And then I was in a parking lot, and someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Are you serious about getting your children safe?" And I said, "Yes." This woman told me then, next week at a certain time, meet us here and someone will talk to you about it. And from then on out, everything was very secretive.
I'm going to bring in Garland Waller. She's the co-producer of the film No Way Out But One, co-producer with Barry Nolan, and I should say, full disclosure, former colleagues and friends. Garland, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
And you spent years researching Holly's story. You asked Mark Collins to participate in your film. He declined. Holly had saved tons of documents. You got others through the Freedom of Information Act. There's a lot in this story, but I want to focus on one thing you say is a flaw in the family court system. The family court evaluator, the person who's brought in as sort of the referee, who ascertained at one point that Holly had Munchausen's disease.
Well, in this particular case where they looked at Munchausen's, they were referring to Holly trying to get medical support and advice for her children, and it was used against her.
Was the evaluator trained?
No, she was not trained. She read 8 articles. Six. And then made a report, and that report was the one that was used in court.
Well, so Holly, you take your children, you meet up with this underground network, you and the children eventually end up on a plane to Australia without any passports. Now, this was before 9/11, but still, you somehow managed to get through security. But when you change planes in Amsterdam, officials there are not going to let you in. And, you know, they kind of laugh at you. Nobody flees the United States.
Yeah, they were laughing at me. And they said, there's no way I'm American because an American wouldn't do this.
Well, but you brought a suitcase of court documents, including evidence of abuse. So the Dutch authorities said you could be considered for asylum. But while waiting, you and the children were sent to a refugee camp, refugees from around the world. What was that like, living for 3 years in a refugee camp in Amsterdam?
When I was in the refugee center, standing in line for an hour to get a piece of bread, education was always very important for me, and my children were missing a year of school. They didn't even speak the language, and they weren't allowed to go to school until they could speak a little bit of Dutch. So I thought, you know, am I making a mistake here? Maybe I'm messing up their whole future because they won't be able to have a proper education. I had a lot of doubt along the way. And I would even question the children, okay, is it too hard now? Should we give up? Should we go back? And the children would beg me, please, did you forget? Do you forget how bad it is?
Well, finally, a Dutch lawyer championed your cause. The children get to speak to a panel of judges for the first time, tell a court their story. The court believes them, grants you asylum in the Netherlands. You live there for 17 years. The children flourish, become champion cyclists, fine young adults. Then someone drops a dime, and the FBI finds you. Now, remember, you're on the most wanted list. Here is your daughter, Jennifer, again in the documentary No Way Out But One, telling what happened when an FBI agent called.
When he felt comfortable that I was healthy and happy and where I wanted to be, he said that he would take down my picture off of the internet and he wished me a good life. And I thought that was my favorite conversation I've had with an FBI agent.
Holly Collins, the FBI cleared you, but you decided to come back to Minnesota to face outstanding charges against you. Why did you do that?
I promised my children that someday their voice would be heard. And the only way I could do that was to face the charges against me. They dropped all kidnapping charges and parental abduction charges, but this one judge was holding out for an apology. I just couldn't do that. So I went back and I asked for my punishment for disobeying this judge.
That was the one charge that stuck, contempt, and you were sentenced to community service, the Justice Department closing the case in 2009. You know, we should say you had four more children in Holland, plus you adopted a couple from the refugee center, and decided to bring everybody back to the U.S. Why?
This is my country, and I wanted my children to know what it's like to be an American. The court made a mistake, but this is still the best country.
And Garland, as we said, we're going to talk to someone about any broader implications here. But, you know, there are people who have been in family court. People have seen people lie. They've seen different kinds of stories than the one you're telling. What do you say to them?
We need to understand what is going on in our family court. That if you beat somebody up, your wife and your children or your children, you can still get custody of those children through a court. This happens every day in this country.
The documentary is No Way Out But One. Holly Collins, it's her story. And one of the filmmakers, Garland Waller, has been with us as well. I want to thank you both for coming in to talk about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And by the way, we contacted Holly's ex-husband and the court evaluator for comments. They didn't respond. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's do go wider. What are broader implications? There are mothers and fathers who think there should be family court reform. We'll hear about that in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our look at one aspect of family courts. We just spoke with Holly Collins, who fled to the Netherlands with her children and eventually gained asylum there after she said courts awarded custody to a father with a history of abuse. Her story is featured in the new documentary No Way Out But One. Lundy Bancroft is an author and expert on domestic violence and family courts, and he joins us now from New England Public Radio in Amherst, Massachusetts. Lundy, to review, a judge in Minnesota agreed that Holly Collins had been abused by her husband. At one point, court officials said she should get her kids out of the house because of concerns of abuse. Later, the father is awarded full custody. Of course, there are abusive mothers as well. But how often does this happen?
I find it to be a very widespread phenomenon that perpetrators of domestic violence, perpetrators of child sexual abuse, perpetrators of child physical abuse are ending up with primary custody.
Well, and you know, and we are going to hear from fathers' rights groups who say just the opposite. So do you have numbers to back that up?
You know, the research that's been done is not very detailed. Really, the most solid study we have is about 20 years old now. It's the gender bias study in the state of Massachusetts. It found overwhelming pro-father bias in child custody. In other words, by about 1990, the situation was very different from what people knew in, say, the 40s and 50s and 60s. We've got other studies showing that judges are just as likely to give custody to the father where there's a history of domestic violence as where there isn't.
Why is that? You've heard judges speak about this. What is the kind of thinking that you're hearing?
Judges don't have the time or don't feel that they have the time to go in deeply into the evidence. So they want to just say, well, you know, let's just cut the child in half for each parent. Another issue is that it's very widely believed, in the absence of any research to back it up, that allegations of domestic violence or of child sexual abuse, if they're arising in the midst of a custody dispute, are very, very likely to be false. And actually, the research studies show that they're very likely to be true, and that there are not huge numbers of false allegations, even in custody disputes. There are some. But my experience as an investigator, I did custody investigations for years, was that the more carefully I investigated the case, the more allegations proved true. What I believe the abusers in court are really hoping is that the judge will never look carefully into the allegations, or that the custody evaluator will never look carefully into the allegations. There were cases that I publicized, some in one of my books from California, where two different judges on a case said to a woman, I assume that you're lying. And this was a case where a woman was reporting that her ex-husband was threatening to murder their 9-month-old baby. And a week and a half later, he did murder the 9-month-old baby. I've seen judges and evaluators write in their findings or in their reports things like, this child was observed to be very affectionate with the father in the evaluator's presence, so it's very unlikely that these sexual abuse allegations are true. Well, no statement could possibly be more ignorant about child sexual abuse than to think that a child would never be affectionate under supervision with a parent that had sexually abused them. You couldn't have read one book about sexual abuse and believe that.
You also cite court employees who've told you, gee, if a dad wants to get involved, isn't that a good thing?
I hear that one over and over again, where because there's so many fathers that just drop all interest in their children, the father who wants to get involved is assumed to be coming with good motives. And where there's a history of domestic violence or a suspected history of domestic violence, you can't assume that his motives are good for wanting to get involved.
Well, you talk about that the family courts have to change. People on both sides of this debate might agree with you. You know, people who think they've been wronged no matter what side of the debate you're on. And so talk a little bit about what changes you'd want to see. We heard in Holly Collins' case about a court evaluator who was not did not have any expertise in medicine, but accepted somebody else's torn out newspaper article about something called Munchausen by proxy syndrome and decided that that's what Holly Collins had, that she was overacting when she said her children needed to be treated for allergies and Holly didn't feel the father was doing this. Who is the court evaluator? Who gets to be this person who decides?
Well, there are not useful standards for who gets to do custody evaluations. That's step one. But secondly, custody evaluation in itself is a huge problem because it's essentially a way to bring lots and lots of hearsay into the court that's then very, very hard to test. So we need so many changes at family court. We need much clearer rules of evidence and much clearer rules of procedure, the way you have in a criminal court. We need to start having decisions made by a panel, say, of three judges rather than one judge. To have all the decision-making power in the hands of one judge is really inviting problems. We need to have requirements about the following of the best research in the field. And then that relates to what you were just saying about what happened with Munchausen by proxy in the Holly Collins case. We have to have provisions for counsel for people who can't afford it. Now, that doesn't exist currently in civil proceedings. That only exists in criminal proceedings. And we have to have a family court that's instructed by the state to take a protective outlook on children, the way a juvenile court would, the way a child protective system would. The family court currently doesn't think of protecting children as being part of what it's there to do. It's there to protect the rights of parents.
It's interesting that the children in the Holly Collins case were heard by a panel of judges in Amsterdam, but not heard by a judge in the U.S.?
Yeah, our family court system is really rampant with kind of arbitrary decision-making. Appeals courts do not generally want to put much effort into reviewing family court decisions because they see it as a kind of he said, she said, which it isn't. The evidence is almost always there if you want to examine it.
Holly Collins talked about an underground network of people who helped her, and she says helped, you know, women like her. Does that underground network really exist?
It did. I don't think it really does anymore. I think that there's much tighter domestic control now in the United States. And so a woman who's dealing with a very capricious or dangerous set of decisions by family courts and court evaluators is less likely to have any path now by taking matters into her own hands.
Well, some would say that that's maybe a good idea. We've seen the opposite happen. There's a very famous story of the woman who took her child to Brazil, separating that child from the father. And we're seeing the dramatic reunions now. And in that case, the father seems like he was wronged. So, you know, given that, is it perhaps better that it's been tightened up?
I'm not advocating making it possible for parents to flee with children. I'm advocating family court reform so that parents stop having to need to flee with children to keep them safe.
Lundy Bancroft, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're sort of back where we started on this topic. What are your thoughts? Should the family court system be more transparent for fathers and mothers? Should more than one judge make decisions about custody the way it's done in Holland? We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Just go to hereandnow.org. Back after the latest news, here and now.